Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to the newest edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Weatherspoon, and we are doing the super topical topic today. We are going to talk about the very recent change, the announcement and conference this past Saturday, lowering of the ages for both men and women to serve missions. Involved with that is also some adjustments to training lengths and different stays at MTCs. And it's a neat and an exciting time. Everything's been a buzz for the last couple of days, so we thought we'd take a good look at that and especially focus on the announcement about the women's age being lowered from 21 to 19. And just we'll get into speculating and enjoying the rich possibilities that might be part of that. But I'm excited to have the panel that I do. We've got people from different generations, different stages of life. I'm going to introduce the one person who's on the panel who's been on the podcast before, and that's my good friend from out there in Tooele. I just moved everybody from Tooele. I've been there for 13 years. I'm now in Bountiful, Utah, so I'm going to miss this friend, so I had to drag him in there. But we'll stay super connected, and that's Adam Jacobson. Adam, would you remind everybody a little bit about your background, and especially as it relates to missionary stuff right now?
Sure, you bet. I'm a lifelong member of the church, raised in Southern California. I lived in Utah with my family for about the last 20 years. Father of five, including one return missionary son who just got back at Christmas time last year, 2011, and one son who just got his call to Bolivia and is leaving in December. And I'm a project manager for a construction company and a friend of Dan's.
Woohoo!
I'm glad to be here.
Great. Thanks so much, friend. We'll pick your brain on all those different pieces and just trust your good wisdom. And for those who follow the Facebook groups and things like that, you'll see Adam as a regular contributor there and much appreciated voice. So thanks. Hannah Wheelwright, let's introduce you next. You're the generation that this really is affecting right now. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I am a sophomore at BYU, originally from the D.C. area, studying political science. And I actually work at the MTC, just in the training department. I'm kind of like a secretary, been there for about a year now. And I am 19 years old, and I was one of those girls in the church that was extremely gung-ho about going on a mission. And then I had a faith transition and kind of stopped talking about going on a mission, kind of hoped people would forget about that. But then with the announcement yesterday and my phone blowing up and everybody contacting me over Facebook, realized that that's not really going to be a possibility anymore. So I'm still in the camp of undecided how I feel about the announcement, still trying to figure out what's going to happen there and making my own decisions. But it's definitely an interesting time, and it's something that I'm still kind of in the middle of figuring out.
Awesome, Hannah. Thank you so much. And we'll pull on all that. You also are involved with a BYU group that gets together regularly. Do you want to share anything about that?
Sure, yeah. So BYU has a women's studies minor, and they actually just started up a women's studies honor society, but there's not a BYU feminist club. So recently, as I guess within the last year when I was going through my kind of feminist awakening, I just wanted to, ideally, I wish that there was a BYU feminist club, but there can't really be an official one. So back in July, I started up a blog with a couple of friends called Young Mormon Feminists. And it just so happens that all of us are BYU students, and so we write the blog together, and in conjunction with the blog, I started organizing Feminist FHE on Monday nights at 8:30 here in Provo. So basically, it's just a time people can go to their normal FHE and then come to this one. It's just a discussion group, and we get together, talk about feminist issues. Tonight, for example, we're going to be talking about Valerie Hudson's Two Trees talk. It's come up in past weeks, and people have some pretty strong opinions about it. So we basically just get together, and it's a good place for people to talk about feminism and the church in a very safe environment where there's a really wide breadth of opinions and it's not a place for judgment and things like that. So it's been really interesting to see kind of the feminist scene at BYU and how it's grown and evolved, and I'm really glad to be a part of it.
Well, great, and thank you for that, and I'm glad you're so plugged into so many voices, so we'll draw on all of them, so thanks. Hey, our third guest is our most famous guest, maybe, long-time voice in Mormon stuff, and certainly the reason I thought of her was she's the editor of a book that just celebrated its 20th anniversary, and her particular piece within this book, and the book is called Women in Authority, Reemerging Mormon Feminism. Hers is on sister missionaries and sort of that interesting in-between status that sister missionaries have of called, but not necessarily authority, you know, in terms of priesthood and stuff. Anyway, it's Maxine Hanks. Maxine, welcome to the show. Would you, you know, say whatever you wanted to say about that article or your background with the issue, but also tell us all about the rest of your stuff related to missionary work, too.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's a delight to be on the show with you on Mormon Matters. I've listened to your podcasts in the past and really enjoyed them. And I feel like I'm kind of coming back to public discussions of Mormonism after a long journey away, 20 years. The book was about a 3.5-year project back in the late 80s and early 90s, but I wrote an article about sister missionaries because it was a personal quest. I had served an LDS mission back in the 70s from 1978 to 1980 in Florida when it was one of the two pivotal states for the ERA battle, and I had a lot of feminist issues come up for me on a mission. And also, I had always wanted to serve a mission, and I had to wait till I was 21, but I had to wait a little longer to do the paperwork and get the money together. So I served my mission from age 22 to 24, and I was very frustrated when I was young by having to wait until I was 21. I would have loved to have gone on a mission at 19. I was ready to go at 19, and I was frustrated that I couldn't go at the same age as the elders. But so that was an issue for me. And the article that I wrote about sister missionaries looks at it analyzes the nature of the missionary calling and compares the women's missionary calling to the men's and sort of analyzes deeply how their callings are the same and in what ways they differ. And then I also looked at the history of sister missionaries also and charted.
Yeah, I'll definitely link to the Signature Books Library version of it and everything. So
yeah, you can read the article online. It's called Sister Missionaries and Authority. Also, we've started discussing my book on Feminist Mormon Housewives a couple of times, and I'm starting that up again. So we're going to have some rip-roaring discussions very soon because the topic is timely.
Great.
We'll be talking about it. I taught at the Missionary Training Center in the 1980s for about 3 years, and I taught in the English-speaking area, but I taught both on the on Sunday for, you know, church doctrine, gospel doctrine, but I also taught during the weekdays in the regular classes, and I was part of a special zone that was testing new missionary programs. So I was asked to try out new programs on missionaries and evaluate them and see how they worked, and that was an interesting experience. I worked there on testing new programs at a time when they were trying to shorten the stay of missionaries from 4.5 weeks to shorter, and so they asked me to try to squeeze as much material as I could into that time and see if I could cut the time down to learn all the material and pass it off within a certain amount of time, and then to cut that by a full week, and then to cut it by a full week again. That connects to the new information and the new announcement, because apparently I really took note of this when they said that they were going to cut the time of stay for missionaries from the current, whatever it is, 3 weeks. They're going to cut that by 1/3. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is exactly what we did in the 80s. Yeah. And it was really hard on missionaries. It was just pushing them so hard. But at the same time, so even though this new announcement for me personally parallels that shift, on the other hand, I was really happy to see that as part of that announcement that they made, they said they were going to shift that training actually into the mission field, which I think is brilliant. That way they get the training they need and they get it on site, which I think will be really effective.
Yeah. Now, Hannah, you can speak to that a little bit. Let's just kind of go a little bit out of order from what we planned. But you at least did some inquiry today, because President Holland Elder Holland in the press conference said that this is a piece that's already been taking place in the mission field, a 12-week sort of special immersion program. Tell us what you know and learned about that.
Right. So I just asked around a few friends, and they said that it's referring to this program that actually started being implemented at least about a year ago. And basically what happens is it just happens an extra hour of companion study every day. And there's a trainer manual and a trainee manual. And it basically just covers the doctrines within each lesson, each of the 8 fundamentals of Preach My Gospel. And it just goes a little bit more in-depth into them. And it's just a 12-week program. And at the end of the 12 weeks, they're just done with the manuals. And so from what I understand, it's just something that the mission president kind of monitors. And it's supposedly it'll help kind of pick up the pieces that maybe the missionaries didn't get fully from the MTC experience.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that, because so it's just the senior companion grabs the trainee manual, the junior companion, the incoming missionary has the other one. I guess where Maxine was probably focusing was on not necessarily teaching the doctrine and things like that in this shorter period of time. You were rainbow discussions, weren't you, Maxine?
And well, then, it was no,
or
we
was
were,
it the transition to the?
It was the transition.
To, okay.
They had just stopped the rainbow discussions, and they were shifting. They were writing the short form, so it was a drastic transition from a pre-printed. Memorized program, which was the rainbow discussions. We called them the rainbow. They were color coded, then shifting to an outline form. And it was as big a shift as back in the late 60s, early 70s, when they shifted from the flannel board to the rainbow discussion.
Right,
our shift
charts,
from the
yeah.
rainbow to the short outline was a shift from memorizing a script to just having an outline where it left it to the missionary to really personalize the lesson.
Right. So I guess where I was trying to go with Hannah is now they no longer even have discussions to pass off. It's just more like this is the area that we discuss it, lesson one,
right.
discussion two.
Right. Well, it's kind of like at the MTC, what they're learning now is just is how to teach people. What they're doing at the MTC is they have a fundamental every day. So they have two three-hour class blocks, and they have an hour of learning about one of the fundamentals of Preach My Gospel, where they're learning about the doctrine of Christ, teach people, not lessons, the role of the Holy Ghost in conversion. And then they actually have an hour every day where they're teaching a progressing investigator. And so for most of the missionaries, they're teaching their teacher but their teacher takes on a character, kind of a persona.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of workshops at the TRC, so the Training Resource Center. And so kind of what they're learning in the MTC is more how to teach people. So it sounds to me like this 12-week program is learning more about the doctrine that they're supposed to be teaching people. So the MTC experience is no longer teaching people how to tract or how to fill out area reports so much as it is teaching people how to connect missionaries with, or investigators rather, with Heavenly Father. And so I think it makes sense to me that they would be trying to use the MTC experience to just teach about teaching, basically, and then to have the other doctrines and things covered in the field.
Good. That's helpful. All right. I want to dive in. As I kind of prompted you guys, let's just talk about the nature of this announcement. It was read by President Monson there right at the very beginning of conference on Saturday. It was fun to watch them cut away to the crowd when the 18-year-old, from 19 to 18-year-old for the men, and then especially when the announcement part came about the 21-year-old women to the 19-year-olds, just to see the faces of surprise and smile and whatnot. So it was fun to see it. But what was interesting to me is neither there nor in the press conference neither place did we get the sense that they were announcing a revelation from God, that they introduced it as policy change, effective immediately, this is going to be this. And yet, when you got to, I can't remember how much of it was in the Saturday session announcement versus the press conference, but at the same time, we got from Elder Holland especially the word hastening, that at one point in the press conference he says, this isn't about you young people, this is about the work. The Lord is hastening his work. And he talked about, he didn't tie it to a second coming, he didn't tie it to anything like that, but I can imagine, I want to hear you guys speculate whether how many people you've heard have gone there with like, wow, the winding up scene is starting, so we've got to do it. But he was just trying to say people around the world are requesting more and more missionaries and things like that. But I kind of want to get a feel from you guys what you think about the character of the announcement, kind of taking it out of angel trumpets and sort of getting it into that mode of simple here's a policy change. We're going to experiment with it. We don't know how it's going to work at the MTC. We don't know how we're going to fit more missionaries into there. We're going to kind of play it by ear. We'll really know a lot more in a year from now type stuff. And especially one of the key parts on that was when Peggy Fletcher Stack during the press conference asked him about women perhaps going to 2 years. And he said, oh, hold on, one miracle at a time. That definitely was discussed. We wanted to see how this goes now. And so I like, personally, the practical feel of it. But Adam, would you reflect on what you think about just the sort of nature of how they did it? And does this help or hurt or raise expectations or lower expectations in case there's a lot of tweaking ahead?
Well, I try to put it all in a general context through maybe the history of the church. First thing that came to my mind was Joseph F. Smith going to Hawaii when he was 15 or 16 and how young that seems. And I didn't even know that there was a 20-year-old requirement back when Elder Holland went on his mission, and he was one of the first to go at 19. So obviously the ages can change depending on, you know, what the social environment is. And then I also think of, I don't remember it feeling like it was a super big deal. It was a big deal for those of us at the time who I didn't have the option to go 18 months. They were just tapering that off when I was going on my mission, but that felt like a policy at the time. As far as, does it seem like a revelation? Maybe in Elder Holland's statement there about the Lord is hastening his work. I think he's always been hastening his work, and it's kind of up to the leaders of the church to figure out how they can implement that. And maybe I look at this as they've got a big spiritual brainstorming session that they've been having for months and figuring out what we can do. Mission presidents are requesting more missionaries. We've also got issues with young adults maybe falling away after they get out of high school.
Right. We'll get into that for sure later. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think they've probably been thinking about it for a while, and they express it in these kind of terms. But it's more of a means and methods kind of thing on how to approach the work.
Yeah. Have you heard anybody or seen on the blogs anybody pick up on this hastening thing and emphasize it as in terms of sort of a reading of the signs of the times? Because I haven't yet, but I haven't been watching as closely as maybe you guys have.
I haven't, and I'm also thinking of Elder Packer's talk from one or two conferences ago where he says, "You're going to be you, all you folks are going to be grandparents. Don't worry so much about..."
You will have a future. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So to me, it's more of a policy change, even though Elder Holland expressed it in that way. That's a logical thing that you could just, you know, you could say about PR, you could say about the I'm a Mormon campaign, that we're reaching out, we're hastening, and you've got China and you've got other countries that might be opening up, and we've got to get prepared for that and so on.
Awesome. Hannah, what about you? Have you heard anything, anybody particularly focusing on this hastening thing and reading it in any interesting ways, more revelatory than practical policy?
Right. So I haven't heard anybody hone in on the hastening part. Okay. I know that the Daily Universe, you know, the newspaper here at BYU, there was a quote when they were covering the story, there was a quote from a girl who said, "This is the most glorious revelation. I'm so grateful for, you know, modern day revelation." And I was kind of surprised by that, because I kind of agree with you that most of what I've heard is that it sounds totally like a policy change. You know, the way that it was announced in General Conference, President Monson was saying, you know, we had tried it. You know, it sounded to me like he was saying we tried it out as an experiment and it seemed to work with the young men. And so then we're going to have the young women do it. So to me, it does sound very laced in policy. And to me, it sounds like they're using this as the, you know, one of those stepping stones. Elder Holland called it in the press conference, one miracle at a time. It's kind of an example to the church membership, in my opinion, that other changes can be made, and they are policy changes that are good and it will move the church forward. And so I think, to me, it's all very policy-based. I agree with that. But I do think that there are a lot of people who are going to misread it and think that it is revelation, and think that, I think we get really confused between what is inspired and what is revelation.
Right, because, yeah, they naturally prayed about it, everybody felt good, they came to a consensus, and so in some ways that is revelation, but yet they clearly seem to me to be, like you're saying too, taking that, dialing that down a few notches. But like you say, there's going to be people like that person quoted in the Daily Universe. So,
yeah,
very interesting. Yeah. Well, good. Maxine, have you been hearing any buzz? Anybody been jumping in with you saying, the heavens are opened again?
No. What I've been hearing is women talking about how wonderful it is that it's that women don't have to wait that whole 2 years and that they can go earlier. You know, but in terms of just this policy change, I see it as very typical. I don't see it as earth-shattering, at least in terms of experimenting and trying new things. The nature of the missionary program has always been that way. It has constantly been in flux and changed and evolved. I mean, all through the 20th century, we've seen so many programs tried and in different places and new programs. We've seen ages change. In the 1950s, women were discouraged from going before age 23.
Right.
They were asking women to wait till they were 23. President McKay in 1951. And you know, you only see women being called starting in 1898 in terms of formal call. But, I mean, change is the nature of it.
That's a good reminder.
You know, when and where missionaries can serve, you know. Like, under special circumstances in the past, I remember hearing about women who got to go on their missions at 19, either because their dad was a mission president or because there was some special circumstance. And then they mentioned that in 48 countries, men already serve at age 18.
Yeah.
So I just see this as more of the same sort of, you know, ever-changing, ever-experimenting missionary program, except in two ways. And those two ways would be, this is reminding me, this is a special surge, it seems like, because what they said, you know, the reasons was to increase options for young men and women and to expand the numbers of missionaries. This reminds me of that call President Kimball made back in, when was it, the late 70s or early, around 80, 1980. He wanted to see 60,000 missionaries, and there was this huge sort of surge and push. For me, this feels a little bit like that. And back then, you know, they were talking about, in a way, you know, the time is short. The Lord needs more. We need to preach the gospel to everybody in the world. And there was this feeling of, you know, the time is short. We need to increase the numbers. So this is reminding me of that call that President Kimball made for 60,000 missionaries. And I do hear people talking about, I mean, I do hear in conference talks and other church members talking about that it feels like the last days. We're seeing a lot of signs of what a lot of people interpreting as sort of the last days. So there is that feel, but it feels like a push for greater numbers. The other way that it is different than policy change as usual is that the significant shift that it will make for women in terms of their lives and the equality between men and women, which is another topic.
Right. We'll get to that for sure. Well, thanks. Yeah, that's a good reminder that the missionary program probably is the most experimental of all of them. And so that's good. So let's keep it out of the rafters and into the realm of pragmatism and things. So a couple more things about the announcement that maybe aren't getting as much emphasis here. And it occurred to me, back at the Raising the Bar about 10 years ago, there was this sense that mission presidents were spending so much time with just the 10% problem missionaries and they were ignoring the others. And so there was a sense of getting people better prepared to come out, maybe better screening about mental health and anxiety disorders and things like that that might prevent people to go. There was some talk about different ways to do alternate missions, and full-time service wasn't for everyone. But there was this point at which a lot of local leaders, because there wasn't a whole lot of leeway what it meant to raising the bar, started to create their own standards. You need to save $2,000 before we'll let you call. You need to lose 75 pounds before we'll let you, you know, turn in your papers, things like that. And there's a lot of self-directed stuff. Well, as part of the press conference announcement, Elder Nelson and Elder Holland both talked about, we're going to expect you 18-year-old missionaries and you 19-year-old sister missionaries to be more prepared, to have your gospel study up, to have your purity and your unsullied from the world kind of stuff to par. And so I'm just wondering what you guys think about that piece of it. Does that sound to you like, and partly couple that with the emphasis that this isn't for everybody. We're not saying that every young man should serve a mission at 18. This is an extra option. Same thing, we're not asking every young woman to say 19 is going to be the desert age. But to me, there's sort of a leeway there that might lead to some of this same stuff that happened during the Raising the Bar era. Adam, have you done any thinking about that particular angle on this new announcement and how they're going to integrate it?
Yeah, definitely. It seems like I hadn't remembered that thing that Maxine said about when President Kimball wanted those 60,000 missionaries, but it dropped significantly 2002 or 3 whenever they announced the raising of the bar,
right.
And they're going to get a spike, a temporary spike in just from the young men that would be going anyway, but now they're going a little bit earlier,
right?
And then they'll also get a hopefully a well. From the church's perspective, a long-term increase on young men that might have been getting lost during that year, and then more young women. So definitely something that's going to be good for the church, and will kind of counteract that. You're still going to have this. I assume they're going to still keep the same standards from the Raising the Bar thing that they did back then.
Yeah, and to me that seemed to have calmed down. I haven't heard as many horror stories of particular stake presidents putting onerous, requirements ahead of certain people the way that they were then. But certainly probably sexual immorality is at least a year, right? Things like that. Those would probably be in place still.
Yeah, who knows how long. It's an individual basis.
Yeah. Have you, Hannah, you there at the MTC, any of the buzz about that angle, or just among the people that you're talking to, like, what do they mean by this increase my spiritual prep kind of stuff?
Yeah, I've definitely heard a lot of buzz about what does that mean to increase personal worthiness. Does that mean there's going to be more probing questions about masturbation or about pornography or things like that? But I haven't heard anything, definitely nothing officially about it. And I think most people are talking about the extra training prep, wondering what that'll mean for maybe BYU will come out with new standards for, mission prep classes or something like that, or maybe there'll be enhanced institute programs. And I think somebody asked Elder Holland about that at the press conference, and he didn't really have any details, but I think that that's what people are expecting is has been buzzed, just asking maybe if the seminary program will be revamped or something
right.
like that. I think it's just a push to have the education come sooner rather than right at the MTC.
Yeah, and I think it's just going to turn out to be a shift in how people think. I'm going straight from high school to it, and I just think all that will sort of help naturally, and the rest will just play itself out. Maxine, any quick thoughts on this amorphous, we're going to expect higher standards of you when you're 18, and now a lot of local leaders will be saying to themselves, well, he doesn't really have to go when he's 18, so I can throw this extra, Book of Mormon 3 times before he gets to put in his papers or whatever.
Well, no, I do think it's significant, and I do think it's telling, and I do think it's one of, I picked out 3 additional points as to why this change came, in addition to the 2 that they said. I mean, they said it's to increase the numbers. They want more missionaries, and it's definitely going to do that. And also to expand or increase options for young people. They're,
right.
So along with that, one reason that I saw clearly is that so many young people have been in this kind of limbo, elders for a year waiting until they're 19, women waiting until they're 21. It kind of removes that limbo. And I think there's a definite desire on the part of the church to see to retain young people from falling
right.
away.
And we're going there next. So stick right now with the effect of an amorphous sort of, we're going to raise the standards for you to go. I mean, not necessarily raise it, but our expectations are not going to lessen for you 18-year-olds over what we had for the 19-year-olds.
Right.
Anything there?
Right. Well, no, just simply that I think it has to do with strengthening it and retaining the youth.
Okay. Well, again, okay. You're moving us into the next topic. So I guess I was more, I was more focused on the amorphous nature of undirected local leaders. And so let's move into probably what many people are speculating is behind this gap year for men, this 3-year period for women after high school, sort of the marriage emphasis and sort of the different things. So now let's get into that. So Maxine, I'll let you start. Adam, I know you've done some thinking about this. So Maxine, you were ready to go there. So
speculate.
I mean, how much do you think it really is? Angels, revelation, hasten. You know, we want to allow that possibility versus like, we are losing these guys in droves. Maybe somebody that a bishop reported at age 18 is ready for a mission. We're losing, 15, 20%? I don't know. How much do you think it is just like, let's drive that commitment to the church, that further deepening of spirituality and things like that so we don't lose them in those gap times?
For starters, the brethren, and particularly the apostles, they're far more aware. They're far more in touch and aware and care very much more about what's going on with members than I think a lot of people, including a lot of liberals and feminists, think that they are. They're really, really aware. And I think they care very much. And I think they want to try. What I've been seeing the last 2 to 3 years is experimenting with different things to try to help retain and increase interest and retain young people. And of course, the new changes in the Young Men and Young Women's program that just also came out this conference is in sync with that. So yes, I think this is huge. I think they care about the dropout rate. I think they want to activate and strengthen our young people. I think that's a big part of this.
Okay. Now, Adam, I'm not saying that you're among them, but you're aware of the voices that are pretty cynical about this. And catch them, keep them in, keep the thought police, don't let the external world, influence them during that year that they might be at college and hearing interesting thoughts from interesting people or, just more exposure to the internet, that kind of stuff. Tell us what you're hearing as well as what you think.
Well, that year for a young man between 18 and 19 can be almost like a no man's land. If you're not going to school for LDS young men, I'm speaking young men because I've been in young men's and church leadership for a while, and I see that mostly. But if you don't go to a church school where you're immersed in all these activities and spiritual stuff, or you're at a regular university and you're going to an institute, a singles ward, at least where I live, is not the greatest option. And sometimes they're stuck at home and they're languishing and indecision. Sometimes they go inactive. Other influences can hit him. For example, my son that is at Utah State, he had enrolled in the one who's going on a mission, he had enrolled in an archaeology class, which he dropped because he thought it was too anti-religion. There's plenty of kids that could stay in that archaeology class and by the end of their freshman year decide that they don't want to go on a mission. Mm-hmm. Lots of things can happen in that year. And I think that the church leaders have been working on this issue for a while. You think of the recent, I don't know if it's the last year or two, reorganization of the young single adult wards. Maybe Hannah knows more about that. But that, to me, is an effort to try to, it was overtly stated, right, that we're trying to, we don't want to lose track of you.
Right.
I think Elder Ballard said that. We know where you live. I think he said that in a fireside. You can even look at it from, if you want to get cynical, you can look at it from a social engineering standpoint, that we've got a year for these young men that's unaccounted for. For the young women, even more so. But right. For the young women, I feel even worse for them because it's a huge time of confusion, which Joanna right. Brooks puts in her Ask Mormon Girl column really well today. And so that's a huge time when the church realizes, and I heard it said once that the single adult was the church's single biggest problem. Mm-hmm. So if you give them a path, which now they're kind of doing it, you give them a path where they can hop right from seminary to Sweden or seminary to South America, it really solves that problem for a lot of young men. Now, I see from experience in my ward, the majority of the boys that reach 18 do not go on missions. There's a good percentage that do, but it's still not a majority. And they're getting a job someplace away from home, and then they get involved in their life and they buy a car and they're renting an apartment, and all of a sudden they're not so excited about a mission, or they go off to school and they get more interested in school,
or they screw around at school. I was talking with my nephew yesterday and he says, and then they have to repeat the classes because they're not as old and mature. So for him, it was like, hey, skip that year of screwing around at school. You're on a mission. You get older, more focused, and then you'll do better as a freshman. That was Alicia's thought, but yeah, you're right. I shouldn't interrupt you, but that all those stuff definitely there. Yeah.
So I see. You know, Maxine brought up those two points that were stated by the church. I think in this, you know, we've been given the model of how Word Council works in worldwide leadership trainings, where it's kind of a collaborative effort where the Word Council gets together and decides at the local level, and it's called inspiration, it's called revelation, kind of group revelation, how Word operates through the Word Council and counseling with councils, right? I'm sure that happens on a larger level with the brethren, and they've been working on this for a while. I think they've been working on it for quite some time, because I see ties into that young single adult Word change. I see ties to, you know, President or Elder Holland said we're not going to build any new MTCs, but they are building a 9-story
expanding Provo,
right down in Provo, which I believe is going to be a classroom building. So they've probably been thinking about this for a while, and I think they're killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. Hannah, add anything that you want on that, and then I want to deal with the cynicism about it, because we hadn't really get to that yet. But what are you what are you thinking?
Yeah, I just kind of there's been some great points made. The only thing I want to add is I'm one of those people that if this announcement had come, you know, before I turned 19, I'm 19 right now, but if this had come earlier, I would have been super gung ho. I would have had probably would have turned in my papers and would be gone right now on a mission. But so it's kind of bittersweet a little bit to hear the announcement and think, oh man, you know, if this had come earlier, I would be one of those girls that immediately, you know, I've heard stories of 13 girls calling the executive secretary right after that first session of conference to wanting to start their mission papers. So, but because I'm more, you know, in my faith transition where I'm not still, it's not off the table, but I'm definitely a lot more cautious and a lot more hesitant to jump in that way. And I think that it's been something that a lot of people are feeling right now. And I think a lot of women in the church are feeling like, is that something that if I had heard that at 19, would I have answered the call per se, or would I hesitate? And so I'm one of those people that's hesitating.
Thank you for sharing that. It's an interesting piece. Maybe that is a good transition to the more cynical piece, because Adam, I know you're constantly on the blogs and the you know, Facebook things, and I have a sense with a lot of people who are in a faith transition or in a crisis, let's say, and you know, they're sort of breaking free from what they felt like was an oppressive church, and they would listen to a lot of the talks at a conference like this and say, oh, the church is trying to narrow what the focus is, and this is how you'd be Mormon, and they're sort of reacting to church, and they're kind of coming out it with a cynical attitude that says, yep, let's just keep them in the pipeline and, you know, further obligate them into the church and things like that. And they're kind of forgetting, I think, a lot of them, that they're probably glad they went on a mission. I don't know what percentage of the people who have gone on missions are really upset that they went. I'm sure there's some. And so there'd be legitimate reasons, like, I don't want my child to have to go through, you know, kind of the undoing that I'm going through and things like now. So I talk a little bit about what you're hearing out there, and you know, you have a couple of, you've been in a faith transition of sorts, and certainly a deepening and a reevaluating things. Like, how is you know, how have you avoided the cynicism that you're kind of probably hearing out there?
Personally, I do worry a little bit about 18-year-old young men. I you know what? The next Sunday, this coming Sunday, in the priest quorums around the church, things just got a lot more serious. These priests are all going to be looking at each other and go, holy cow, all the ones who are turning 18 before they get out of high school, they're going to be looking around, and their bishop's going to be looking at them going, are you ready, brethren? I know what my bishop would say. He's going to sit in his chair. He's going to look around at that priest quorum and say, brethren, are you ready? I think it's definitely the church's prerogative to change the date and make it a... I just hope there's some compassionate church leaders out there that might look at a boy and say, you know what, maybe, I know there's a big trade-off, because from the macro perspective, the church, they get more missionaries, missionaries versus more mature missionaries, because for the ones who do go on a mission, that maybe go to college, they're around professors, they're around different people, maybe they're challenged, and maybe they're a little bit ready to be out. I think of a lot of the kids that will end up going straight from seminary out into a potentially hostile mission field, it's going to be a pretty big shock to them. As far as the cynicism that you bring up, it's basically just that. It's just that the, you know, a cradle to grave kind of thing for the church that, you know, run through all the ordinances and the programs and make sure you get indoctrinated as soon as possible and as thoroughly as possible.
Yeah, so that's what you're hearing.
Yeah.
Maxine, you obviously went through a huge faith transition in your life. I mean, mm-hmm. you've always been very spiritual. I always kind of put you more in the mystical camp just from knowing you mm-hmm. all these years. Did you ever regret your mission? More positives than negatives? Would you ever join in this chorus of folks who, I kind of want to spare my child from what I went through? Or how? What do you see when you're seeing that online?
Boy, it's really interesting. It's like anything else. You know, any other loss of faith or faith question or faith crisis, I went through all of them. I mean, I went through all kinds of transitions and stages and everything from atheism to mysticism. And I understand them. I know where they're coming from, and I understand them, but I have a bigger perspective now. I feel like I have a fuller, more complete perspective. I feel like I've run the course, you know, the full course, and I'm not cynical anymore at all. But, you know, cynicism is a part of the whole picture, and it's one important perspective of the many perspectives. Being non-cynical these days in my life, really wanting to see the whole picture and see all the perspectives and see the greater wholeness that comes out of all of them together, I think it's situational. It depends on what kind of experience you had on your mission, and also whether or not you think that a missionary experience is an important rite of passage.
Oh, that's a great point.
Which I think it is, which is a whole other topic that I wanted to get to. So I don't know. We won't.
Let's not do it now. Maybe do it towards the end.
I look at this program not at all cynically, but in terms of, wow, how would that have made my life more organized and really tightened up the plan of my life if I could have gone at 19, because it's an important rite of passage. So I think what they want is to help young people find maturity and responsibility that you get from that incredibly powerful rite of passage. I mean, how many kids get sent off to learn a foreign language or go to a foreign country or go clear across the country, you know, at that age? It's an important education, and it's a deeply maturing experience. And so, you know, I see it as this is really moving that maturation rite of passage down, you know, to a lower age so that teenagers can move right into that. And I see it as incredibly positive. But in terms of my own mission, it was an incredibly important rite of passage for me in my life. There were positives, there were negatives. There were things I loved about it, things I regretted. You know, it's all part of what, you know, you can't call any experience one or the other. They're all those experiences are wrapped up together in it. But it's an incredibly important rite of passage. And this also brings up another topic that I think we're going to get to in a minute, which is equalizing that rite of passage for men and women, right, which is hugely important.
We'll go there for sure. Hannah, maybe you can help me a little bit on the question of, to me, it feels like most of those voices that are so cynical to me, they're focused on the church, on the climate of the church, you know, the homophobia, the sexism, the, you know, it's being led by older guys, and, you know, and a lot of the you know, people that are in these podcast communities, and I imagine the circle of friends that you're having there at BYU and probably in your own life, you're saying, man, the world's so much bigger than this, and they want to narrow it, and it feels like church as the focus, and there's only one way to be Mormon. Do you think more people would be less cynical if they really just focused on a mission as, like Maxine was said, you get to go to a foreign country perhaps. For sure you're going to go to a different culture. You're going to have a time out of normal space and time where you're worried about, am I attractive to the other sex? You know, all that flirtation. And, of course, we know that we'll talk about that a little bit, that perhaps the lower ages and the equalizing them a bit more would play into that. But I'm just trying to think about the adventure of being out there and having nothing else to do but rely on God, on the Spirit, to think about other people. And it's less about, oh, I'm bringing them into a church that's then going to run their life. And it's more like, if they want to make a change, there's positive things about the church, as long as I don't overemphasize that the church is the celestial kingdom, you know, and I just say the church is there to serve you on a spiritual journey. Do you think that would, I don't know, does that broader thing help?
It's an interesting point. I've been thinking about that a lot. I mean, right after the announcement, when I realized that I was going to have to answer to everybody way sooner, actually 2 years
right.
sooner than I thought I was going to have to. And I was thinking a lot about, you know, would I still be able to go on a mission? Is that still even, is that something that I could really, because I had kind of written it off a little bit in my mind, thinking, you know, I don't know if I could do that. And then it was kind of like, well, maybe I could, you know, what is a mission really? You go out and you share a message with people and you say, hey, you know, this has really changed my life. Do you think that, are you interested in learning more about this? Maybe it could change yours too. And so I think in a way, if that was what a mission really was, because there have been a lot of things in Mormonism that really helped me through hard times. And I went to a boarding school for high school where I was the only Mormon, and really having my scriptures and having the connection with the gospel was really helped me to stay, you know, emotionally and mentally and capably strong. And I really felt a deep connection with God there. But it was since then that that I faced a lot more questions, and that I went through a much deeper faith transition. And now my hesitations are, I don't know if I could go through the temple. I'm not sure if I would be, I don't think that's something that I can really do. Additionally, the idea of, like you mentioned, you know, indoctrinating people into this church, that I'm not completely okay with everything that goes on in it. So I think that in a way, there's many people who might say, you know, oh, it's just an experience. You go, you talk to people about Jesus Christ, you get to learn a new language, you know, it's 18 months or 2 years of dedicating your life. But I think that for a lot of people, and I would put myself in this camp, it's a little bit deeper, and it's this idea that, you know, after serving a mission, I would hate to feel like I regretted bringing people into a church that I don't even want to stay in myself.
Yeah, that word indoctrinating kind of definitely is what a feel that I think is behind a lot
right.
of these voices. Yeah, and I'm wondering, and again, I'm speaking from age 53, and I've, you know, been sort of the outsider in my wards in terms of, like, okay, yeah, I can listen to what you say, but I'm not buying into the narrower view and all that stuff. But I'm remembering my own mission that, you know, so much of it is individual. It's you and your companion. There's not a lot of things. Certainly there's going to be some rhetoric and some gung-ho, and the church is, you know, the equating the church and the gospel, or equating, you know, all you got to do is be a member of the church and get these ordinances, and man, you are just hang on, endure to the end, you know, kind of thing, versus I really kind of wonder if you had a really good mature perspective about the church and say, look at, you know, if you want to make a change, here is a community, give it a try. But know that no church is the end all be all. They're there to serve, you know, what is it? The church is made for people, not people are made for the church, you know, kind of thing. If you could sort of communicate that as a, in the early teaching process things, do you think that would sort of dial down the expectation of I'm indoctrinating them into this thing
right.
that they'll never be able to get perspective on?
I think that could be one solution, but I don't know how well that would fly with the vast membership of the church. I mean, I guess my perspective is a little different because I'm an East Coast Mormon. Like I said, I was the only Mormon at my boarding school, so I grew up with a very different Mormonism than I have encountered here in Happy Valley. And so from the people that I've met here in Utah who grew up in heavily concentrated Mormon communities, it's been a very different experience to see that. I don't think that that's something that would fly with a general membership, because I think most people do still hold and will still hold to the traditional view of a mission being, you know, we just got to baptize as many people as possible, just got to get them attending church, got to get them paying tithing, got to get them, you know, got to get their ordinances done. I don't think that we are at a point in the church, just from what I've seen at BYU at least, I don't think we're at a point where we're really viewing religion and the Mormon church in terms of truly helping people to come closer to Christ. I think we're still viewing it in quantitative terms of church attendance and are they dressing modestly and are they going out and serving, you know, and all these things.
Yeah.
I wish that we were at a point where we were really just saying, you know, Mormonism can be a really good thing when you use it correctly. It's a lifestyle. I think that we're still at a point where we're kind of using different measures of success. So I think if it was different, I think missions would be a lot better. I think a lot of people would serve more missions and wouldn't regret them afterwards, but I'm not sure if we're at that point yet.
Great points.
Can I jump in here,
Dan?
Yeah,
please.
That's a great point for me to respond to, and I really appreciate it. In fact, every time, you know, Hannah describes her experience, it just triggers so many things for me and memories and feelings. And, you know, for me, the way I look at the church now and where I'm at now, my reasons for, like, if I went on a mission today, would be different than the reasons I went on a mission in the 70s.
Me too.
Yeah. And yet I feel really good about teaching people about Mormonism and telling them why it's such a great church and why it's worth joining, why it's worth being a member of, why it's worth staying and working with it, precisely for the reason that Hannah just pointed out. Because for me, it is all about being an organization that helps people to feel the Spirit and be closer to God. And it the way I see the church, and one of the reasons I came back, I mean, a big, big reason why I came back, is that it's a body of souls who want to be close to God. And when I'm with them, when I gather with them, it's the body of Christ. And there's a spiritual feeling that's generated there that is really soothing and healing to my soul. I don't go to church for intellectual discussions. I don't go for any kind of, you know, social reason. I go simply and specifically to feel the Spirit and to immerse myself in the collective spirit of the people who've gathered, the spirit that they're generating. And so that's, I sort of see that as the reason why, you know, to tell people about the church and why I would go on a mission today. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the 70s, I went because I wanted that rite of passage that the men got. I wanted to have priesthood. And the only way I could see that a woman could have a priesthood calling was a mission. And that's why I went. But interestingly, as a missionary, even back then, I was unorthodox. And I wasn't preaching the gospel or bringing people in for the reasons of having them conform to church policy or rules. My entire approach to them and what I taught them at that time was, and it was all focused on helping them to have a spiritual experience, helping them to experience God working in their life.
Awesome. I want to leave this and move to the women thing, but Adam, I want to ask one question of you. I've heard in the past, you know, kind of in these discussions of, you know, well, if my child was going to go on a mission, I would want to inoculate them from the numbers emphasis and the sort of quantitative stuff that Hannah was talking about and things like that. Add now kind of what I was just saying and maybe what Maxine was just saying. Do you see, you know, you're looking at a son about to leave to South America on his mission, and what's the message that you're going to do that sort of inoculates that, and is there pieces of this larger, they want to make a change in their life versus you're giving them the saving truth?
Well, having been on a mission and been in that environment, your father figure shifts to your mission president.
Mm.
And you pretty much, you want to please that man, and you want to shine among your peers.
Interesting.
And you pretty much get wrapped up into the whole mission fervor, and you really kind of go along with the flavor that your mission president, or the tone that your mission president sets for your mission. And my oldest son's mission president was actually a retired psychology professor from BYU down in Chile. And I think he probably, my son, got a different experience on the numbers thing, although numbers I know were important. I think he got a bit of a different experience than maybe some others who were more goal-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as far as inoculation goes, even just going to the temple for the first time, didn't have a good opportunity with the first son, but with the next one I will, as much as possible, to try to explain to him, you know, the significance of symbolism and ritual and things like that before he gets his endowment. So he doesn't, you know, we've heard stories about people really getting freaked out when they go get their endowment, no matter how much they prepare, how much they fast, or how spiritually ready they are. But as far as I've always, when we sent our son on a mission, I just said, you just make sure you're the very best companion for each one of your companions that he's ever had. That was those were my words to him. Because I was in a mission where there was a definite emphasis on numbers, but we had a compassionate mission president. He was very goal-driven, goal-oriented, and there was definitely that push. But I think there was still some compassion there and understanding that we are trying to bring families in and trying to get heads of household. We're trying to get well, everybody trying to, you know, I was in Mexico and we're trying to build the church. So you can't do it without numbers, but you can't do it if people are falling away either.
Right.
I did hear from my oldest son, he would write his letters back and say, well, excited that this family gets to be a forever family. You know, they're focusing on the temple and getting people to the temple. And so, yeah, definitely hope that there's not so much emphasis on the numbers.
Can I punctuate also what I said, Dan? I feel like I should just punctuate that I agree with Hannah that there can be too much focus, and oftentimes in some wards and some with some families, there's way too much focus on, you know, obedience and you know, lesser things, what I would call far lesser. And I would hope, I would love to see, and this is part of what I want to do in the church, is see that the focus shift, the focus be, because I think it's there in many places and for a lot of people, the focus, whether it's missionary work or ward work, really is on the Spirit and on our relationship to God, and that this is about our spirituality more than anything else. And so, but I just want to say, I think Hannah's right that for many people, that focus isn't there. And I would like to see that focus shift to where I think the church is shifting that direction. I'm hearing that in a lot of ways from the brethren.
I think it is shifting too. And you know, it was interesting to me. I kind of think that perhaps it's good. It's a good experience to have it shift for you on your mission. You know, there can be this time where when you're first young, you know, the stuff like Adam was saying about trying to shine among your peers and things like that. And then you see an actual family change or heart shift, or somebody see a new potential for themselves or something like that. And you kind of get it. And in some ways, I kind of like the fact that there might be a growth curve within the mission itself from sort of the things that Hannah is talking about as, you know, the drawbacks to the things to you. I think I went through that myself. Of course, I was almost 24 when I went. I was 25 when I got back, and you know, maybe just my extra life experience kind of put that there. But I have a feeling that you're never going to go wrong in a mission if you sort of say, you know, I think we're focusing too much on numbers. I think we're focusing a little too much on, you know, competition among ourselves. And you know, you could give a spiritual sermon and at least not have people think that you're heretical. I don't know, on your mission. So
that's
my thought.
I would like to see mission leaders and ward and stake leaders accentuate that more, you know, mirror that back,
yeah,
you know, to confirm it back to missionaries, to let them know this is the right focus. This is the focus we want. This is what I'm hearing church leaders, both the Relief Society presidency and the apostles, saying more and more. I'm hearing this shift in their talk and their rhetoric.
Yeah. And Hannah, can you tell us, isn't Preach My Gospel explicitly about that too? I mean, that's part of the shift that's involved with the new way they do discussions, isn't it? Does the numbers just come across as mission culture and the goals to report, or are the less, you know, how much of Preach My Gospel is still about, you know, getting people in the water versus transforming hearts?
Right. I mean, I think that most of Preach My Gospel is pretty focused on the doctrine and on teaching people and appropriate teaching methods and how to teach by the Spirit. I don't think that that's found in Preach My Gospel. I think a lot of it is mission culture, and I think a lot of it is just even just Mormon culture, the idea of, you know, talking about how many people you baptized on your mission.
Right.
There's a lot of emphasis of, you know, guys will toss out a BYU, they'll be like, when I was a zone leader on my mission. So I think there's a lot of those kind of things. I think a lot of it is just culture, but I don't think that's mostly found in Preach My Gospel.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.